Harry and Sally had been married for about 5 years, and they went to see a marriage therapist because they were having some trouble. And in this session with their therapist, the therapist asked them, well, you know, I don't think I've ever heard the story of how the two of you met. And Sally and Harry, both of their faces lit up, and Sally told the story how they used to go square dancing, and that they were quite good at it, actually, and that people would invite them to special square dancing events because they were pretty accomplished with it. They spent a lot of time square dancing, and people would pay money, basically, to watch them square dance. And the therapist said, well, when was the last time that you went square dancing? And they said, oh, gosh, that was 5 years ago before we got married. And the therapist, who was very smart, said, well, what are you doing sitting in my office? He said, get a babysitter for the kids and go out tonight and go square dancing. And he says, this session is over. We don't need to talk about anything else. He said, you need to go out and do something that was what was your original connection, that was your original connection with each other. The activity that got you together, that the activity that got you together, you're not doing it anymore. So go home, go out, find a square dancing group and join it as soon as possible. There's no time like the present. And that story reminds me of what's going on here with Philip and the eunuch in Acts chapter 8. Because everything is all about the present. This story really shouldn't happen if you're looking at just rules and requirements. First of all, in chapter 8, verse 26, the angel of the Lord speaks to Philip. Now, Philip was one of the followers of Jesus, but not one of the original 12. He's a second-generation disciple, if you will. And the angel commands Philip to go to this place that he has never been to before and tells him to go and evangelize in an area of the country he's never been to. So, according to rules and regulations, Philip could have said, no, I'm not interested in that. That's not my kind of thing. I'm not going to do that. But he does. He does. He gets up and he goes towards the Gaza road, and he sees a chariot going by, and there's an Ethiopian riding in the chariot. Ethiopian means that this gentleman is from Africa. He is an outsider. He is a foreigner. He does not belong in Israel. He's going home, and he's not totally welcomed in religious society in Jerusalem, but he's coming back from Jerusalem to go home to Ethiopia. And Ethiopian eunuchs would not be allowed to participate in the full life of the Jewish temple. In the book of Deuteronomy, it says that anyone who is a eunuch cannot enter into parts of the temple. Also, him being an outsider would mean that there would be parts of the religious categories, parts of the religious ceremonies that he would not be allowed to participate in. But he is interested in God, which is evidenced by his reading of the Bible. He wants to hear about God, and he's reading this passage from Isaiah. Like a sheep that was led to the slaughter, and like a lamb is silent before its shearer, so he does not open his mouth. In his humiliation, justice was denied him. Who can describe his generation? For his life is taken away from the earth. And the eunuch says to Philip, I don't really understand this passage. It's rather complex. Who is this he that is being mentioned? Who was like a sheep led to the slaughter? Who is the one who was denied justice? And Philip explains that this prophecy all comes true, all becomes clear in the life of Jesus Christ. Philip explains salvation and Jesus. And the eunuch could have said, well, that sounds interesting, but again, that sounds like it's a lot to do. It sounds like a lot to become baptized and to become a follower of this Jesus. The eunuch could have turned down the offer for good news. But instead, they pass by a little brook, and the eunuch says to Philip, he says, well, here's some water. What prevents me from being baptized and becoming one of Jesus' followers too? Now, Philip could have been the kind of person who was a law and order kind of person. He could have said, well, wait a minute. I don't know if we can do a baptism because, first of all, I got to get on the phone with the higher-ups and see if that's okay. Second of all, this is very against the rules. This is kind of unorthodox. I can't just go around and start baptizing people. I haven't given you any counseling, after all. There's no proper paperwork. I don't have any authority here to baptize you. But instead, Philip says, of course, he's not going to stand between the eunuch and new life. So he baptizes this Ethiopian eunuch. But I want you to think in this story, there are all these yeses. Philip says yes to the angel and goes. The eunuch says yes to Philip in interpreting the scripture. Philip says yes to the baptism. There are all these yeses in the story. And each of these affirmations opens up a new door, opens up a new opportunity. If at any step along the way, anybody had said no, the story's over and doesn't make it into our Bible. If at any step along the way, Philip said, you know what, this was fun, but I'm not going to participate any longer. If at any point anyone said no, well, that would be the end of the story and we wouldn't be talking about it this morning. So remarkably, Philip breaks the rules, the formal rules, in order to baptize somebody in a new situation, in a new area, someone who is foreign and different. In preparing for this sermon this week, I've been reading a theologian from Yale, a 20th century teacher called H. Richard Niebuhr. And he talks about the Christian life and the choices that we're presented with in Christian life as conversionism or transformation. And he says that if you're to act like a Christian in each and every moment, you have to ask a question. How does this moment lead to conversion? How does this moment lead to transformation? And I like that language because it says that if we are to be transformed, if we are to convert, it's something that you can't put off and say, oh, I'll get back to you tomorrow. I'll convert tomorrow. I've never heard anybody say that. You know, I've had this great experience of Jesus, but I'm going to convert tomorrow. No, nobody says it that way, do they? They get on fire for the gospel. They get on fire for Jesus and say, I want to change my life now in this moment. Or if you're like me, you know how it works when you say, gee, the scale says I'm a little heavier than I remember, but I think I will start my diet next week, right? That's just another way of saying, I'm not going to start it at all. The conversion has to start, the transformation has to start at that moment, that very moment. Conversionism, transformation. There was a man who whose name was Clarence Jordan. He was active in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. He started a group community down in Georgia called the Koinonia Farm. Koinonia is the Greek word for fellowship or community that's used in the Bible for talking about the early church. Fellowship, community. On this farm, they decided to live in harmony with one another, like the New Testament talks about. They tried to live as clear as they could as a New Testament community. They all lived together, they worked together, they sold the produce on their farm on roadside stands, they made crafts to help support the community. And it was an interracial community. Anybody who believed in Jesus was welcome. Well, because of their politics, now this is back in the late 50s, because of their politics and their views on race, they were at odds with a lot of the extremists in their neighborhood and in surrounding communities. So occasionally people would come by and they would vandalize their property, or they were firebombed several times, or there was graffiti and harassment. If they went into town to buy supplies, very often they would run into racists and have problems with the community living in a peaceful sort of fashion. Now, Clarence had a brother whose name I believe was Robert. And he was a high-powered attorney who eventually became a state senator in Georgia and a member of the Georgia Supreme Court. Clarence called up his brother one day and said, we really need some legal representation. We are getting hit on every side, and I really need you to help me and to help this community if it's going to go. And Robert says, you know, I'd really like to help you, Clarence, but you know I have political ambitions. You know that I'd love to help you, but once I start to help you, I'm done. I mean, my life as a high-powered lawyer is finished, and this is too hot for me to handle. I'm going to have to decline. Clarence says, I don't understand that. You and I are brothers. We went to the same Sunday school when we were little boys. We were taught from the same Bible. You learned that in the Bible it says there is no Jew nor Greek, slave nor free. How can you turn me down at this very point when Jesus most needs you? Clarence said to his brother, he said, you know what? You're not really a disciple of Jesus. You're a follower, you're an admirer, rather, of Jesus, but you're not really a disciple. And Robert said, well, I can't really disagree with you there. Perhaps you're right. Perhaps I am more an admirer of Jesus than a disciple. And Clarence said, and Clarence had a way of doing this. He was sort of a bigger-than-life kind of figure. Clarence said, well, then if I'm right, you should go down to that church where you worship every Sunday, and you should stand in front of the whole congregation and resign and say, you know what? I like Jesus. I admire him, but I really don't want to follow him. And Robert said, well, if that's the case, there's a whole lot of other people in my church that would also have to resign. What kind of church would that be? And Clarence says, exactly. That's the question. What kind of church do you go to? What kind of church is it do you have now where Jesus has only admirers and no disciples? It's a huge question, a very huge question. And the challenge was to be transformed or converted like Philip or like the Ethiopian. And Robert turned it aside, and Clarence Jordan accepted it fully. Yet it is a challenge. It's something that you can't put off. It's something that has to happen in the present. If you say, well, I'll get to it later, you probably won't ever get to it. Robert had that same problem. Robert Jordan had that same problem. But I promise you that in this upcoming week, in the months, days, weeks ahead, you are going to find moments where you're going to be challenged, where there are going to be moments of conversionism at your feet, moments of transformation. And there's no time like the present to convert. There's no time like the present to transform. Maybe there's somebody out there who, like me, you just got out your summer clothes again because the weather has changed, right? And you find, much to your surprise and enjoyment, that there is still a $10 bill in your pants from last year, from last summer, that you put away for the whole winter. Now, you could spend it on hot fudge sundaes because, hey, you've been awful good lately. Or you could realize that this has been a rough economic year and that you have skimped a little bit on giving to the poor. And since you didn't really expect this $10 bill, maybe it's time to give it to somebody who really needs it and not to Dairy Queen. Or maybe it's that moment of transformation when you run into somebody in the grocery store and, you know, you've got all your frozen foods, you're almost on the way out, right? You always get the frozen foods last, the ice cream is melting. And you run into somebody in the grocery store that you haven't seen in a month. And then on your way out, as you're standing there and the ice cream's getting soft, you spend some time actually asking about their soul, actually asking about their life. And you know that the time is ticking and you know that that ice cream's going to melt, but isn't the person more important than what's in your cart? Transformation. Or maybe you just know where God has been calling you all these years. Maybe you're a good organizer. You've got great gifts and skills for organizing, yet you've sat on your hands because you're waiting for somebody to ask you to do something. After all, if you're like most people, your iPhone is full of appointments, your day timer is full of ink, and who wants to add another responsibility to life? Yet maybe you'll realize that now's the time to answer that call, and that this time the call of God is real. And so, because you're organized, because you're good at organizing, you pick up that phone and volunteer to work at the food bank to help someone get food, because you can do it. You can do it as only you can. Or as the eunuch says, look, here's the water. Here's the bread. Here's the cup. We've got the hymnals. Here are the people of God. What is to prevent us? There's no time like the present. Amen.